A World Bank report has found that the world is already on an unavoidable course to global warming. The report found that even with very ambiguous goals for reducing carbon emissions, the world will see 1.5 degrees Celsius increase in temperature. That's 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit. With a 2 degrees Celsius rise, which the planet is on track to hit by mid-century, Brazil's soybean yield could decrease up to 70%, while melting glaciers will threaten cities in the region. Melting glaciers threaten Central Asia with torrential flooding as well. Thawing of permafrost in northern Russia threatens to unleash stored methane, contributing to a climate feedback loop. In the Middle East and North Africa, increased overall temperatures and more frequent heat waves threaten already scarce water resources. The report called for drastic and immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions to be able to leave the next generation a planet that still supports life.
And now, the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Tuesday, November 25th, 2014. Palestinian fighter killed in Gaza. Meanwhile, a Palestinian youth killed after being hit by a settler's bus in the West Bank. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. A Palestinian youth was killed, two others injured as they were hit by an Israeli settler's bus near the northern West Bank city of Jenin. Nur Salim, 23, was crossing a military checkpoint when a bus driving settlers from the nearby Modo Totan settlement hit him and killed him. His cousin Ala, 27, and unknown third man were also injured by the bus. Israeli troops closed the area and did not allow Palestinian cars from moving, local sources reported. In other news, Israeli soldiers kidnapped on Tuesday at dawn 15 Palestinians in different parts of the occupied West Bank and occupied East Jerusalem and moved them to a number of interrogation centers. Israeli military sources said that the soldiers have kidnapped a Hamas member in Beit Likya town and another Palestinian in Deir Abu Mash'al town near the central West Bank city of Ramallah. In addition, soldiers kidnapped a Palestinian from Idna town, west of Hebron in the southern part of the West Bank, and another Palestinian in Jericho City. Also in Idna, soldiers broke into and searched several homes and interrogated dozens of residents while inspecting their ID cards. Late on Monday at night and on Tuesday at dawn, soldiers invaded various neighborhoods in occupied East Jerusalem and kidnapped 10 Palestinians, including children and the secretary of the Fatah movement. The army said all kidnapped Palestinians have been moved to a number of security centers for interrogation. In Gaza, the Al-Qassam Brigades, the arming of Hamas movement, stated Tuesday that one of its fighters were killed during training east of Gaza City. The brigade said that the fighter, identified as Abdullah Munjid Alayan, 18 years of age, is from a Tufah neighborhood in Gaza City. It added that Alayan was killed during training on Monday evening, adding it will continue its mission to protect the Palestinian people and defend their legitimate rights until liberation and independence. There have been several fighters who were killed during training in different parts of the coastal region, while many died during tunnel accidents, mainly in Rafah in the southern part of the Gaza Strip. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Tuesday, November 25th, 2014, news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by George Shmawi and me, Ghassan Bamnoura. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Jared Dantzler, Doug McVeigh, Logan Manister, Chris Franklin, and Jim Thompson. Special thanks to our engineer, Siconia Wright. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. And for the latest in our morning talk show and news, you can also visit our website again at kboo.fm. If you'd like to call your elected representatives about any issue you've heard on the news tonight, their phone numbers are, a local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. The number for Senator Jeff Merkley is 503-326-3386. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath, 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River, 91.9 FM. I'm Jackie Malmstrom.
And I'm Jared Dantzler.
Good night, Jared.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
From Missouri, Michigan, Utah, California, New York, and Ohio, the issue of racial injustice comes through case after case. Today, here at KBOO, I spoke with Vernilia Randall, author of the book Dying While Black, a law professor whose writings are featured on her website, racism.org. For more, we go to that interview. I'm speaking with Vernilia Randall, emeritus professor of law at the University of Dayton in Ohio. Professor, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me.
And Professor Randall, could you speak about your reaction to the grand jury's decision not to indict Darren Wilson after the killing of Michael Brown?
Well, both from a legal perspective, I expected that outcome. The system is sort of set up in a way to protect police officers in a way that the other non-police officers are not protected. And so the police officers are very rarely indicted for their misconduct. Both systemically I expected, but then also the way the prosecutor set up the grand jury, he set it up in a way to, in my mind, to get the outcome he wanted, which was no indictment.
That prosecutor, Bob McCulloch, has been scrutinized for his history as being biased. His father was killed by an armed black man.
And I think the issue becomes, that a lot of people have their parents killed, and so that by itself wouldn't be sufficient enough to say he's biased, I think. What really points to his bias is his record of aggressively prosecuting African Americans in a way that is different than he prosecutes whites, and his really tough approach when it comes to defendants. So I think that his record on prosecuting speaks to his bias and should have caused him to recuse himself. The fact of the matter is though he actually turned this very important case over to two younger attorneys. He did most of the grand jury work was not done by him, but by two other attorneys.
Is there any hope that this case could be brought to the federal level?
I doubt it. They'd have to find a civil rights violation. And I think that when they say that the federal government is still looking at it, I think that's probably a factually true statement. It doesn't mean that there's going to be an indictment come out. And the federal government has been really poor on indicting police officers for the killing of unarmed black people. So it's not like the federal government has a history of going around and making these kinds of indictments. So it's hard for me to see what in this case is going to be different from the many other cases that have had filed federal complaints and got no indictment from the federal government. So I don't foresee the federal government coming down with an indictment for a civil rights violation.
You're in Ohio, where just this past Saturday, a 12-year-old boy, Tamir Rice, was shot down by police in Cleveland.
Right. And this kind of, you know, part of what I'm right now, I'm in my 70s and my grandsons are visiting me. I'm African American. And one of the things that on a personal level strikes me that they're only 8 years away from being target for police, and that the system that we have now would do nothing about them being killed by police. I doubt that the police who killed the 12-year-old boy will be indicted. I doubt if it goes to a grand jury stage, it may not even get to that. Part of the problem we have in this society is that police are held to a standard of their own subjective fear and not necessarily to what a reasonable person would do in the situation.
One measure that's hopeful to counteract such police impunity or police violence and accountability is this employment of body cameras that police will wear and will be used as evidence or to maintain accountability. In fact, in Cleveland, over $1 million has been allotted to these body cameras, but the mayor there, Mayor Jackson, has delayed the employment of the cameras.
I think body cameras helped to tell the story, but they don't change the standard of care, the legal standard of care. And so we had the John Crawford case right here in my backyard in Beaver Creek, Ohio, where and the grand jury came down with no indictment, though there was full evidence on film.
Can you talk more about that, John Crawford?
Cameras all around that showed that the police fired on this man within seconds of getting them in his sight. Turns out he had a toy gun in his hand, and they made no effort to determine whether and it was a real gun and or any kind of whether he was actually making a threat. And most of us would say a reasonable person should make that effort, that you shouldn't just start shooting at people because you're afraid and because you've been told by someone that they have a gun. But the grand jury doesn't look at it for what a reasonable person would do. They look at whether the police officers, one, had a reasonable fear, and two, acted in accordance with their training, and three, acted in accordance with the law. And so basically they said, you know, it's unfortunate that this man got killed, but the police officer really didn't do anything wrong. And I think that's what's going to happen with the young kid up in happened to the police officer who killed the young kid up in Cleveland. And I think that's what was facing the grand jury in Ferguson, that they were given a trial. So first of all, you have to say that the prosecutor didn't just try to present the prima facie case to get an indictment. He presented the defendant's defenses, and that almost never happens in a grand jury. The defendant's defense.